Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, June 4th, 2019. Let's begin with a reading of some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Brent, that's B-R-E-N-D-T, Christensen trial, day one. Attorneys put potential jurors to test. Selection begins in capital murder kidnapping case. This article is written by Ben Zigterman and is based out of Peoria. Nearly 2 years after Yingying Zhang was last seen, the trial of her accused kidnapper and killer began Monday with jury selection. Out of 29 potential jurors who appeared at the federal courthouse in Peoria, 13 were pre-approved Monday to participate in the trial of Brent Christensen. You will hear evidence of kidnapping, sexual assault, and murder, U.S. District Judge James Shadid said, asking whether prospective jurors could keep an open mind about Christensen's guilt. If convicted, he could face the death penalty. Ms. Zhang was last seen June 9, 2017, entering his black Saturn Astra while waiting for a bus on Goodwin Avenue in Urbana. She had arrived from China 2 months earlier and was on her way to look at a new apartment. In later interviews, Christensen told the FBI he let Ms. Zhang out after a few blocks when she panicked. He has pleaded not guilty. Even though her body hasn't been found, the FBI presumes Ms. Zhang is dead. Prosecutors believe Christensen took the visiting scholar back to his apartment and killed her. Ms. Zhang's family was in court Monday in Peoria after flying in from China. Her father, Ron Gao Zhang, watched from the main courtroom while her mother, Lifeng Yi, and brother, Xiang Zhang, watched from an overflow courtroom, according to Zidong Wang, the family's lawyer in Chicago. A few members of the Chinese consulate were also in attendance, as were four reporters from news outlets from China, where the case has garnered significant interest. Several reporters from the Chicago area were also on hand Monday to cover the first day. In Urbana, a viewing room was set up at the federal courthouse where around a dozen people watched a closed-circuit stream from Peoria. As Shadid questioned potential jurors, Christensen, dressed in a blue button-down shirt and khakis, sat with his lawyers. In most previous hearings, he appeared in court wearing a prison jumpsuit. Judge, a good start. Shadid said he hopes to wrap up jury selection by early next week, with opening statements following soon after and a trial that lasts 2 to 3 weeks. But the process of questioning jurors was slow going on Monday. Around 9:15 a.m., 16 candidates were brought in and answered questions as a group. Individual questioning began around 10:30 and didn't wrap up until 2:30 p.m. By then, seven potential jurors had been pre-approved. Then the process started all over for another group of 13, which answered questions individually for close to 3 hours, starting at 3:45 p.m. Court was adjourned for the day around 6:45 p.m. when six of the 13 were pre-approved. During individual questioning, lawyers for each side could ask Shadid to strike jurors for cause. Others could be excused for reasons of hardship. We established today that we can make a lot of progress, Shadid said at the end of the day, thanking everyone for their time and attention. He called it a good start toward moving this matter along. 22 of 29 knew of case. In group settings, potential jurors were asked a variety of questions, whether they could remain impartial, their views on the death penalty, if they'd heard about the case, and if they knew anyone involved. They were read a list of potential witnesses that included about 90 from the prosecution, mostly FBI agents and biologists, and about 55 from the defense, including Christensen's former wife. None of the potential jurors said they knew any of the potential witnesses, though one mentioned that one of the court clerks had grown up in her town. She said that wouldn't affect her ability to be fair. 22 of the 29 said they had heard about the case through the news, with a few adding that they'd already formed opinions about Christensen's guilt. Asked whether he could set his opinion aside, one potential juror said, "I don't think I could." Another potential juror said she somewhat had an opinion about Christensen's guilt, but would try to be open-minded. Another said he had formed an opinion about the case because he works with a local police department and was more likely to side with the prosecution. And another said the same because she worked for the Federal Bureau of Prisons. Death penalty discussion. The potential jurors were also asked a number of questions about their views on the death penalty. One woman said God doesn't want us to take revenge, and that if the decision came down to her, that would be hard. A couple of others said that if they were on trial, they would prefer the death penalty to life in prison. They were also asked about potential hardships of serving on a jury that is expected to meet Monday through Friday for several weeks. If Christensen is found guilty, Shadid said there would probably be a one-week break around the July 4th holiday, followed by the sentencing phase, which could take another 2 to 3 weeks. One potential juror said she lives paycheck to paycheck and her employer wouldn't cover so many weeks of jury pay. Another said she wouldn't be able to pay rent if she was away from work for so many weeks. And another said he's a salesman paid partly on commission, making a long trial a hardship. Yet another said he owns a small business and had difficulty just taking off Monday. Jury selection is scheduled to continue 9 a.m. today in a similar manner until 70 potential jurors are pre-approved. Once they are, each side gets to strike 20 jurors without cause. After that, the first 12 remaining will be on the jury. After that, each side will get another 3 strikes, with the first 6 remaining selected as alternates on the jury. The next headline reads, CU Retail, New Life for Old Business. Record Swap's next stop, Lincoln Square. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Urbana. Record Swap, which was on the verge of closing in April, will live on in a new space at Urbana's Lincoln Square. Store owner Bob Diener said he's signed a new lease to take over the smaller of the 2 spaces occupied by Connections Resale Shop, which is closing June 30th. Diener said he hopes to be open at his new location by August 1st and maybe even before that. In business for 40 years, Record Swap has been at its current spot at 114 East University Avenue in Champaign for 12 years. Diener had been facing a potential closing at that location because an upcoming rent increase in July would have been unaffordable for him. After news was out that he might be closing if he didn't find a new space, Diener said he had several customers asking him to remain open, plus offers from property owners to show him other spaces. About 7 or 8 landlords called me or came by asking me to go look at their place, which was wonderful, he said. I had 3 of them the first day. Had he closed the retail shop, Diener was planning to continue operating his vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs business via mail order, but some of his older customers weren't happy about that idea, he said. There were a couple of people who were really distressed because this is where they get their records or CDs, he said. The Lincoln Square store will be 2,200 square feet, about the same size as the current space, Diener said. Customers have been supportive about the upcoming move, he said, and some have also told him it will be easier to access because it comes with Lincoln Square's parking lot. In his current spot, he said, we've never had good parking. Not only that, Diener said, he'll be able to walk to work in about 8 minutes, and I won't have to shovel snow in the winter. He also likes being near the shops already in Lincoln Square, among them the Idea Store, Common Ground Food Co-op, and Art Coop. Not only that, downtown Urbana has increasingly grown in live music venues, Diener said, and hopefully something gets done at that hotel. After some failed attempts to redevelop the landmark hotel next to Lincoln Square, there was a pending deal announced recently to turn the hotel into a boutique Hilton Tapestry-branded hotel. If he takes possession of his new space early enough, Diener said, he may have a moving sale going on at his current spot for a week after his new Lincoln Square store opens. The next headline reads, Unit 4 Construction. Referendum budget now at $239.8 million. More could follow $30 million increase. This article is written by Lindsay Jones and is based out of Champaign. The new budget for the Champaign School District's voter-approved referendum project is $239.8 million, but expect that total to rise again before it's over. After that figure was presented to the Referendum Oversight Committee at Monday's meeting, member Neil Strack asked officials whether it includes potential cost differences for International Prep Academy, one of the latest scheduled projects with a current budget of $6 million. It didn't. The $239.8 million number is an update from the original projected total of $208.4 million in 2016 and includes recent overages at Edison Middle School at $10 million, Central High School at $9.2 million, and Centennial at $8.1 million. Potential overages could increase that budget, and depending on the judgment of board members, International Prep's 1957-era building could be the source of some of those overages, according to Elizabeth Stegmeier, the district's director of projects and planning. Officials are working on a capital projects plan at the board's request that will detail any needed work remaining, as well as any maintenance issues in need of fixing prior to updating a state-mandated health life safety report in 2023. The goal is to synchronize the capital projects work with any code-related updates, like fire alarms or accessibility, in a 5-year plan. In September, we hope to give them a plan of the prioritization of the projects and how that money would be spent over 5 years, she said. Also, we want to, at that time, talk about IPA to see if there's a desire to do more for the project than what the minimum of the referendum calls for. It wouldn't be the first time that happened. The $10 million bump to Edison was partially a byproduct of code violations officials said needed immediate attention, like electrical and plumbing issues, as well as a needed fire safety system. And what ultimately happens to International Prep may also be influenced by an upcoming report to the board from the district's Tier 1 committee, which looks at capacity-related issues. That has been a concern as student enrollment grows in the district. We have no shortage of students, school board president Amy Armstrong told the group. Financing plans for the overages are still being worked out. Board members have heard several presentations on available funding options, including selling land or using district savings or moving money from contingency funds. One other concern oversight committee members heard about? Rain. Contractors are wrangling with the effects of constant precipitation as they work to meet summer deadlines, Stegmeier said. Central, Centennial, and Dr. Howard are working on foundations, and they were really struggling because it's been so wet, she explained. As of Monday, there were 51 days for contractors to meet summer-specific construction goals prior to the return of students. O'Shea Builders' Greg Schroka told members they are doing everything we can to mitigate current weather-related issues. The next headline reads, Legislative Look Ahead. What's next? A lot to offer. It was a memorable spring legislative season for higher education and those who like to get high, and a forgettable one for coal ash dumpers and gun control advocates. Here's editor Jeff D'Alessio's look at a few of the winners and losers of the session that Governor J.B. Pritzker deemed a rousing success. Winners. 1. Medical marijuana users. Expect the number of licensed cardholders to climb from 60,000 or so, and not because that group will be allowed to grow pot plants in the comfort of their own homes as part of the recreational marijuana bill. Under a less talked-about bill, lawmakers approved 11 new conditions that would qualify for medical privileges, among them migraines and irritable bowel syndrome. 2. Education majors in the college class of 2023. Land a public school teaching job in-state, and you're guaranteed to make $40,000 minimum per the new salary scale legislators signed off on. It's been 3 decades since the minimum teacher salary law was changed, hence the number currently sitting at $10,000. And 3, college ads. If you want to, or ADs, I think it's ads, it's capital AD. If you want to bet a few bucks on Illinois and next year's Big Ten tournament, you'll have to cross the state line to do it, legally anyway. Josh Whitman and company got their wish in a gambling bill, which bans all betting on Illinois college sports teams. And the 3 losers, in the loser category, I should say. 1, smokers of cigarettes, not pot. If long-term health problems weren't enough of a deterrent, this might do the trick. Come July 1st, the tax on a single pack of cigarettes will jump from $1.98 to $2.98 statewide. That puts Illinois number 2 in the Midwest. Minnesota charges $3.04. Earlier this year, ours became the first state in the region to bump up from 18 to 21, the minimum age to buy tobacco products. 2. Inappropriate bosses. Sponsor Melinda Bush says SB 75, State Bill, or Senate Bill 75, might be the largest piece of workplace sexual harassment law that's going to be passed this year anywhere. Among those things, the bill requires all employers to provide sexual harassment prevention training once a year and requires governments to provide an independent review of any allegations of harassment made against elected officials. And three, long-distance commuters. The good news, many of the roads and bridges Illinoisans travel on will get overdue upgrades. The bad, to help pay for it, the tax on a gallon of gas will double to 38 cents. The next headline reads, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of managing editor Mike Goebel. Cleanup efforts from the May 26 tornado outbreak continued in earnest on Monday for the Public Works Departments of the cities of Champaign and Urbana. Today is the last scheduled day for debris to be placed at the curb for pickup, though both cities said cleanup will continue for several more days. We're still in triage mode, said Jeremy Schultz with the city of Champaign. In history, area history. In 1919, area residents were upset to learn that the battleship Illinois was relieved of active duty and it would soon be broken up for junk. In 1969, the University of Illinois hoped that the psychology building under construction at 6th and Daniel Streets would be completed by September for use in the fall. In 2004, the Jerry's IGA at 2010 South Philo Road was set to close in 2 or 3 weeks due to declining sales, said Jerry Reynolds, president of Kirby Foods, the Champaign company that owned that store and 19 other groceries in Illinois and Indiana. The two Jerry's IGA stores in Champaign, at Round Barn and on Kirby Avenue, were doing well and would remain open, Reynolds said. International history, today's highlight. On June 4, 1942, the World War II Battle of Midway began, resulting in a decisive American victory against Japan and marking the turning point of the war in the Pacific. On this date in 1919, Congress approved the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution, guaranteeing citizens the right to vote, regardless of their gender, and sent it to the states for ratification. That was 1919. And now let's take a look at our weather forecast over the next week. This is provided to us by Greg Soulier and his column on the weather front. A frontal zone will drift east from the Great Plains, reaching the southern and eastern U.S. by midweek. A subsequent system will affect the nation's midsection later in the week, maintaining showers across a broad area. The forecast could be complicated by a tropical disturbance moving northwest over the Bay of Campeche in the southwestern Gulf of Mexico. The tropical disturbance could enhance a late-week rainfall from the western Gulf Coast into the mid-south. 5-day rainfall totals could reach 1 to 4 inches from the central and southern plains east into the Mississippi Valley. Widely scattered showers will affect the north and lower southeast while cool air arrives in the northwest. Today, the temperature is 79 degrees, partly sunny, an isolated shower or thunderstorm in spots. Chance of rain is increasing to 30%. Overnight, mild, occasional showers and thunderstorms. Chance of rain is at 60%. Wednesday, tomorrow, the high will be 85, the low will be 66. Cloudy and humid, chance of showers and thunderstorms at 50%. Overnight, chance of showers and thunderstorms will be at 40%. Thursday, the high will be 75, the low will be 66, mainly cloudy, a period or two of showers and thunderstorms. Chance of rain is at 60%. Friday, the high is 76, the low will be 65, considerable cloudiness, a couple of showers and thunderstorms. Chance of rain is at 50%. And Saturday, the high is 77, the low is 67, variable cloudiness, a shower and thunderstorm in spots. Chance of rain is at 50%. The next headline reads, in honor of my father. This is from Jody Heckel's column, The Starting Line. Local joins Illini 4000 on bike from NYC to San Francisco for a good cause. University of Illinois students who are cycling across the U.S. this summer for the Illini 4000 organization will ride into Champaign-Urbana today. The student-run organization raises money for cancer research and patient support services with an annual ride from New York City to San Francisco. The cyclists started their journey on May 17th and are scheduled to ride into San Francisco on August 3rd. For Zane Inman, a rising sophomore from Paxton, the trip is a personal journey. Inman, that's I-N-M-A-N, had just turned 16 when his father died from lung cancer. My father passed away about 3.5 years ago, and I was always kind of angry at organizations like this, raising money for cancer research. What did that do for my dad? Why did it happen to me? Why am I put through this? I'm working through all of that, Inman said. This is by far the hardest mental and physical thing I've ever done. I need to do it in honor of my father. But also, I need to put myself through this. I need to experience some grit. This has already changed my life significantly, and I'm only 16 days into the ride, he said on Sunday. When Inman went to the first meeting for Illini 4000, he thought he was joining a casual cycling club. Then the members of the group started a presentation on the cross-country trip. I didn't even know this was a cross-country cycling club. This was not what I meant to sign up for, he said. Then they started talking about cancer fundraising. I felt I was put there for a reason. Inman said his father loved riding bikes on short casual rides with his kids, but Inman has never been a serious cyclist. I went from a couch potato to a soon-to-be cross-country cyclist, he said. To be honest, I don't even like cycling. It's wildly inefficient, it's expensive, it's boring. I'm not doing this because I like biking. I don't absolutely hate biking, but when I get back, I'm probably never going to touch my bike again. What is getting him through the almost 80-day journey? Every good thing outweighs that. I'll put up with it because it's a good cause, a good reason to be here. In addition to supporting people affected by cancer, the good things include getting to know the other riders who have formed a close-knit group. I'm surprised at how close I've gotten with my teammates just in these short 2 weeks. We're constantly shooting the breeze, sharing things about ourselves. This is already my family, he said. The team began indoor training last October, meeting twice a week to run or do other cardio workouts to stay fit. They began biking in March with a 20-mile ride during the week and a long ride on the weekend. Their first long ride was 35 miles in temperatures in the 40s, wind, and rain. They built up from there to completing 2 90-mile rides. Inman took a 3-week break from cycling for finals before the team left Central Park in New York City on their first day for a 60-mile ride. That first day was definitely a shock for me. It was only 60 miles, but hills were very different around New York. Training in Illinois, you can't really train for hills. That first day, I was dying. It was by far the most physically and mentally exhausting ride I've ever done. I was beaten down, Inman said. But he added, we're all getting stronger, so it's getting easier in a way. But each day has its own unique challenges. Inman has done service work before, including trips building homes for Habitat for Humanity. But this trip is different, and not just because of its length and strenuous physical activity. It's the satisfaction of knowing I'm doing something good. This is by far the most important work I've ever done, he said. Nothing matches this level of commitment and the effect we're having on people. Before their trip, the cyclists met with a scientist on the U of I campus whose research is supported by one of the organizations for which the Illini 4000 raises money. Seeing this tangible research had an effect on me, Inman said. I'm actively helping. It's a great feeling. And as a sidebar, welcome to CU. What? Reception for the Illini 4000 riders. When? 4 to 6 p.m. today. Where? At the Alice Campbell Alumni Center, located at 601 South Lincoln Avenue in Urbana. And wait, there's more. Cyclists are invited to ride along with the Illini 4000 team as they leave Champaign-Urbana at 7 a.m. Thursday from the Campbell Center. The next headline reads, Champaign Public Library, budget balanced, but funds needed. This article is based out of Champaign and is written by Alberto Toledo. Without any assistance from the city, the Champaign Public Library will once again have a balanced budget, thanks in large part to charitable donations of over $300,000. But like the city, the library also has a number of unfunded needs it must find outside money to meet, like potentially adding more staff to cover security and after-school shifts and run the service desk. As Library Director Donna Pittman said during a council meeting last week, it's all because the library is performing so well. We're looking now at adding more hours on the weekends, Pittman said, which is something she's heard the community advocate for. We want to expand our virtual presence, are resources that people can access 24/7, and we want to expand outreach to address targeted community needs. Pittman said the library has already reached its capacity for cultural events and activities. Space is at a premium, she said, and the library wants to expand opportunities for civic engagement, lifelong learning, and general meeting spaces because we just don't have room for everyone who wants to come. The increase in the library's popularity is apparent to anyone who has driven around it in the past few years. Some of its initiatives include workforce development, training, early childhood learning programs, and career building classes. Through a partnership with the Champaign School District, the library has also expanded its membership, issuing 788 library cards to students. 41 of them would not have been eligible without the partnership. And through a partnership with Tumble Books, the library has provided more than 1,900 books to teachers for classroom libraries. With the help of the Mother Goose program, a library staff member has given out over 4,000 books to build home libraries. And it's all well worth it for Councilmember Matthew Gladney, who said the library's contributions are immeasurable. I still hear compliments about the building over a decade later, he said. But even more than the building is the people in it. Even though people come and go, we've always had quality folks at the library. People always think of libraries as a place where books sit on shelves, but our library has always been more than that, to its credit, and continues to be that. 96% of the library's 2019-20 budget of $7.9 million comes from property taxes. The next headline reads, Mohammed Seymour School Board, Tax Anticipation Warrants Planned. This article is based out of Mohammed and is written by Penny Weaver for the Mohammed Citizen. For the first time in more than 20 years, the Mohammed Seymour School District expects to issue tax anticipation warrants in order to pay its bills this summer due to a lag in property tax funds due from Champaign County. It's unprecedented, Trent Nuxall, the district's chief school business official, said of the delay in funding. On Monday, school board members unanimously approved a resolution authorizing up to $3 million in the warrants in anticipation of the collection of taxes levied for the year 2018 for educational purposes. Nuxall reminded the board that 53% of the district's total revenue comes from local property taxes. The county treasurer's office typically sends tax bills to property owners by May 1st, and schools receive large payments of their portion of taxes in May and June. Nuxall said Mohammed Seymour normally receives about 55% of its annual revenue in those months. That's around $8.9 million in total, he added. According to the website for Champaign County Treasurer, Laurel Pressing, as of Monday morning, property tax bills had been mailed, and the first installment is due July 1st. Although the district has some reserve funds, they're not enough to cover expected bills in July without property tax revenue. The resolution, approved by the board, allows up to $3 million to be borrowed via tax anticipation warrants, or TAWS, that's T-A-W-S, lowercase s, T-A-W, at a maximum interest rate of 4%, with the latest maturity being September 3rd. And as always, you can tune in at WDWS today, 1400 a.m., for Penny for Your Thoughts, where there'll be a visit from Justice Robert Stegman. He visits with host Brian Barnhart for 2 hours, starting at 9 a.m. And tonight, there's also sports talk. NBA expert Travis Tate chats up the NBA Finals, and I believe that's at 5 p.m. tonight. To chime in, call 217-356-9397, or you can text the following number, 217-351-5357. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, June 4th, 2019. I always enjoy reading with you. Thank you for having me, and please stay tuned for part two of the News Gazette, which I'll be reading shortly. Thank you again, and have a wonderful day.